Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of The Morning Yankee Show. It is Friday, March 27, 2026, coming to you live the morning of Game 2 of the 2026 season as the Yankees look to improve to 2-0 today against the San Francisco Giants. And good news, if you're not aware, tonight's game is on YES. But I keep saying tonight. It's not tonight. It's at 4:35 Eastern is first pitch. And we got a bunch to get through today. Of course, the debut of Cam Schlittler will break all of that down. Some quotes from him. We also got to touch on, and we'll do this first after a little off the top, we're facing Robbie Ray tonight, who's, of course, a left-hander. Had a pretty good year last year, actually. And we're going to do a little lineup prediction because the question is, are we going to see the anti-lefty lineup implemented as early as Game 2? And that, of course, means will Paul Goldschmidt play? No Ben Rice? Hopefully not. Nothing against Goldschmidt, but Rice should be playing. We'll break all that down in just a moment. But of course, this is The Morning Yankee Show. Subscribe if you are new. Click like on the stream. And reminder, it is available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Yeah, yo, let's get right into it. But before we get into our set topics, I also want to remind everybody, we will be live for the watch party for tonight's game. Probably getting live around 4:15. That is on the main channel. So hope to see you guys there. We'll also be live tomorrow as well. And every game this season. We'll miss a couple here and there, I'm sure. Anyways, it is good to see you guys here. Happy Friday. Hope everybody's had a fantastic week so far. Before we dive into our main topics, though, I do want to pull this up. This is an article from John Heyman this morning, of course, of the New York Post, and it's about Paul Skeens, and it's titled that the Yankees haven't given up hope on acquiring Paul Skeens. And what's really interesting here is, you know, he goes into the thought process that he feels, and I guess the industry, that there's a good chance Paul Skeens ends up being a Yankee. Now, take John Heyman's word over mine. Take any actual beat reporter or anybody that actually is, you know, considered a source over mine. But I will tell you what I have heard, and it goes along exactly with what Heyman writes in this article, which is the Yankees fully intend on making Paul Skeens, putting him in pinstripes one day. I've actually heard some things that they've already kind of began the process to a slight degree, at least within what is legal in the, you know, you can get into the tampering side of things. Some things you're not allowed to do when a player's not a free agent, but the Yankees are fully set, from what I have heard, on making Paul Skeens a Yankee. Now, that's in regards to his free agency, which isn't until after the 2029 season. But what Heyman writes in this article here is quite interesting. So I'm looking at the first snippet here at the bottom, saying, sources say the Yankees were prepared to offer four prospects last July. It isn't clear who those were, but as of the deadline, the best prospect package might have included some combination of Cam Schlittler, George Lombard Jr., Spencer Jones, and Carlos Lagrange, or possibly others. Schlittler and Ben Rice are the young players most coveted by other teams, and at least all other instances, the Yankees have been super protective of them. So that is interesting. The Yankees, per John Heyman, last July, prepared to offer four prospects, four top prospects to the Pirates in hopes of acquiring Paul Skeens. Now, he doesn't mention exactly who those guys were. He says he doesn't know, but the example he gave is probably pinpoint exactly what it would be. Now, of course, at the time, Cam Schlittler had not debuted yet, or maybe he had one start under his belt. Things have obviously changed. Not the Yankees' desire to make Paul Skeens put him in pinstripes, but there's no world they trade Cam Schlittler these days. There's no world, I don't even think at the time or now or ever, they would trade Ben Rice. Spencer Jones, I could see him being dealt. Carlos Lagrange, right now, I cannot see him being dealt. George Lombard Jr., I'm of the mindset, in large part because of Dax Kilby, to be honest, who was the Yankees' first-round pick last year, and he's really good. Scouts rave about him. And he's another shortstop. I kind of look at him as, yo, you now have an alternative as like your top prospect to be the future shortstop. One of them should be untouchable, not both. With that logic, I'm actually of the mindset, like, if the right deal is available, you should trade George Lombard Jr. That said, I don't know how realistic that is for the Yankees to go out and do that, but that's neither here nor there. The point is, per John Heyman, last July, the Yankees were legitimately all in on trying to acquire Paul Skeens. And the article also goes on to mention how, you know, Livy Dunn, obviously his girlfriend, lives in New York. And again, just from what I have heard, you know, on the totem pole of sources, put me towards the bottom. I'm not playing the source game, but from what I have heard, I am personally operating off the belief that, yeah, the Yankees are planning to go full throttle all in on Paul Skeens. But I was more so, what I was told was about his free agency, which of course isn't for another few years. Last thing I'll say on this, though, kind of pose the question, is it a possibility this deadline the Yankees could acquire Paul Skenes? I wouldn't bet on it, but that's more so because I don't think Paul Skenes is getting traded, at least not yet. I would imagine it's not going to be realistic for the Pirates to deal him until next July at the earliest, because then you're looking at, what would that be, 2.5 years of control left? This is year three for him. So maybe by next July, it could be more realistic on the Pirates end of things. But even with us, I mean, let's just say the top four prospects that we were prepared to offer last July for Skenes were indeed who Heyman mentions, which he suspects it could have been Cam Schlittler, George Lombard Jr., Spencer Jones, and Carlos Agranje. I mean, at the time, I'm sure I could have... At the time, I actually would have been totally cool with that. Things changed, though. I have no intention of talking like I'm the actual GM. What a world that would be. Things would be good. Cam Schlittler, no way. Agranje, no way. Jones and Lombard, sure, but just those two aren't getting it done. So circumstances have certainly changed, but in terms of who the Yankees would offer, what hasn't changed is I don't think Paul Skenes is getting traded. It was a very interesting article, though, that Heyman put out this morning. Although at the bottom, that little thing he wrote, and for those audio only, on the bottom he writes, one thing the Pirates surely understand, barring the installation of the owner-favored payroll cap, they have almost no chance to keep Skenes past 2029. Okay, fair. Of course, if there is a cap, the Yankees would have difficulty affording him. That makes no sense. If there's a cap, there would be the same difficulty for the Yankees to afford him as any other team that's contending for his services. So I don't really understand that line. Ignore that. But good article from John Heyman this morning, who kind of gets a bad rap. He's a good reporter. Not my favorite beat writer. He's not even actually the beat writer. He's just a reporter. Jules Sherman is far and away the best in the biz. Anyways, let's get into our topics today. And of course, we're mainly going to be previewing tonight's game. I keep saying tonight. Why do I keep doing that? This afternoon, 4:35, first pitch, game two against the Giants. So with all of that said, let's get into our preview for tonight's game. Now, we mentioned that Cam's going to be on the bump for the Yankees. We'll do a full breakdown in just a moment about him. But what I really want to get into is, the lineup for tonight. Now, of course, we don't have it yet, so we're going to be speculating here. For those listening on audio only, we're recording this around, it's 8:08 a.m. Eastern, and the lineup will probably be out around 1 o'clock. But we know that the Yankees really set up their bench as of last deadline, but they also continued it into this offseason with the addition of Randall Grichuk and also the return of Rosario and Goldschmidt. They have a bench that is set up to be lethal against left-handed pitching. And I'll tell you this, no doubt about it, Ahmed Rosario will be starting at third base tonight. Ryan McMahon, really good opening day, really good game one, but with him, it's going to be a very strict platoon. We've talked about this a lot, and this is how it should be. McMahon will play against righties, Rosario will play against lefties. There's not much of a discussion really to be had there. That's just, I would bet the house, Ahmed Rosario will be starting at third base. And I'm very curious, and I have a lineup written out that we'll get to for my prediction, but I'm very curious where Rosario will hit. And a lot of it will depend on if Trent Grisham is playing or not. Now let's go through a little bit of Robbie Ray before we get to our lineup prediction. Now, just a reminder, he, of course, he kind of fell off the radar a little bit. He signed a pretty big deal with Seattle after winning Cy Young in 2021, remember, with Toronto. Anyways, and by the way, I'm showing a video on the screen right now of his start against the Yankees last year. He was actually pretty good against us. It was a four-inning, two-earned run outing, but he did strike out seven. That was the game, though, against the Giants in April, where, if you'll remember, I'm pretty sure Stroman started that game. It was a slop fest. It was pouring down rain. The Giants scored like five off Stroman in the first inning, and it was a pretty ugly one. But Robbie Ray pitched pretty well, and he pitched pretty well all of last year. 32 games started, 11-8 record, 3.65 ERA, 186 Ks in 182 innings pitched. But to get into a more full deep dive breakdown here, he is very traditional left-handed pitcher. Left-handed batters struggle against him. Last year, lefty batters hit just 188 against Robbie Ray, while right-handers hit 230 against Robbie Ray. Some more stats. Lefties had a hard hit percentage of 24.8% against Ray last year. Righties had a hard hit percentage of 33.3% against Ray last year. So a pretty big difference there, near 10% in hard hit rate. Righties hit the ball way better than lefties do against Ray. One last little note. Kind of interesting. Righties, though, do strike out significantly more against Ray. 9.58 Ks per nine righties against Ray last year. Lefties, 7.58 K per nine against Ray last year. But the bottom line is, for the most part, lefties struggle against Ray. Righties are much better. So with that in mind, and just the general idea of what we're kind of doing this year, which is a platoon-based lineup, platoon-based team, which is awesome. Our bench, I've talked about it. I think it's the best bench in the Judge era. I really, really do. Which one could argue is not saying much, but Boone has options. And he's going to have to figure out, he probably already has it in mind, what he wants to do with those options. And I think the main question is, well, one, will Paul Goldschmidt play tonight? That's interesting because we know the Yankees have made it clear. Ben Rice is the everyday first baseman. He's going to play against lefties, as he should. Now, against right-handed pitching, Rice is lethal, and he's only going to continue to get better against both. But it's not a thing where, while yes, he is worse against left-handed pitching, he was still above league average last year, and he still hits for power against left-handed pitching. I'm of the belief Ben Rice should be in the lineup tonight. He should be playing first, and I also want Stanton in there. Stanton looked really good on opening day. We know they're going to be slow rolling him really throughout the entire season. If there's, say, seven games in a week, just for argument's sake, Stanton would play five of those seven games, and at times four of those seven games. So there's going to be many times, early especially, but throughout the year where you might even be feeling good about Stanton, but the Yankees will give him a day off. Tonight, that should not be the case, though. We had off yesterday. We have off on Sunday. Stanton, for the most part in his career, rakes against left-handed pitching outside of some, you know, rare cases. Like 2024, he actually wasn't great against lefties. Last year, he was lethal against both. He had a great season, as we've mentioned a million times, but I think Stanton should DH today. Ben Rice should play first. I don't have Paul Goldschmidt in my lineup. And reminder, the lineup that we're going to get to that I have written out is just my prediction going full, like, platoon-based matchups. Anyways, I wouldn't have Goldschmidt in tonight. He's a bench bat. Maybe consider him as a pinch hitter at one point. But I would start Ben Rice at first base, start Stanton at DH. We mentioned Rosario. No doubt about it. He'll be playing third base. And I'm very curious where he's going to end up hitting in this lineup. I actually am wondering, could he lead off? And that will determine, or possibly be determined by this question, which I think this is the most interesting thing about tonight's lineup. Will Trent Grisham play tonight? Now, he looked really good on opening day, and that was awesome to see. We've talked about how much it's bothered me the way some Yankee fans are talking about Grisham. I get not wanting to have him back on the qualifying offer and whatever you may feel about that, even though I disagree, that's fine. I love talking ball. If you have logic and you want to present it to me and we can go back and forth, word up. Some people, though, it really just feels like they're rooting on Trent Grisham's downfall. So that two-run triple the other day was awesome to see. He also barreled up another ball that was caught, but Grisham looked good at the plate. However, as we know, Grisham struggles massively against left-handed pitching. While he hit 250 versus righties last year with an 870 OPS, Grisham hit 182 versus lefties last year with a 651 OPS. And he's 1-for-6 versus Ray in his career. No homers. By the way, Goldschmidt is, not that this matters too much, small sample size, 0-for-5 in his career against Robbie Ray. With Grisham, though, I wonder what the Yankees will do here, because if it were up to me, and this is a season-based thought, I want to roll out, I won't say a strict platoon against Grisham, because he does still work decent ABs against left-handed pitching. He's got a great eye. I really want the Yankees, especially with Randall Grichuk in here. And otherwise, if you're not doing this platoon, what's Grichuk really here for? I think when there's a left-handed pitcher on the bump, more often than not, Trent Grisham should sit and Randall Grichuk should be in. You would do Bellinger in center, Grichuk in left. Now, will the Yankees actually do this? I hope so, but I would not be shocked if outside of Rosario, who will, again, definitely be playing third base tonight, we see a similar lineup to the other night. I'll give my prediction in just a moment. And spoiler, my prediction doesn't have Trent Grisham in this lineup. But I do want to talk about real quick, if they do start Grisham, will he lead off? Because I actually think Ahmed Rosario should lead off tonight. Unless Goldschmidt's playing, which remember, we saw Goldschmidt lead off more often than not when starting against left-handed pitching, Goldschmidt would lead off. And that's all well and good. We know about how good Goldschmidt is against lefties. Last year, what was his numbers? He hit 336 in 149 at-bats, Goldschmidt did against left-handed pitching. But I don't want Ben Rice out of the lineup. I don't want Stanton out of the lineup. So I have Goldschmidt sitting. Here is my lineup prediction slash more so, not even prediction, like what I would do. What I would do, this is the lineup that I would roll out tonight. Rosario's starting, Goldschmidt's not, and neither is Grisham. I have this. And you'll notice, for those that are watching, I'll run through it 1-9 for the audio listeners. I got Ahmed Rosario leading off. And I think this is the way to go. So Dan Roark's lineup, what I would do for tonight against Robbie Ray is this. Ahmed Rosario, Cody Bellinger, Aaron Judge, Ben Rice, Giancarlo Stanton, Jazz Chisholm Jr., Jose Caballero, Austin Wells, Randall Grichuk batting ninth, rounding out the order, playing left field. Now to explain my logic here, Rosario, again, we know he's going to be playing. Will he lead off tonight? If Grisham isn't playing, absolutely. Otherwise, I'm not sure what else you'd really do unless Goldschmidt is starting. But in my lineup, I don't have him starting. You figure, whether it's immediately once Ray comes out or just as like a pinch hitting thing, I don't think they would take Rosario out just because a righty comes in right away, because you know he's still a competent hitter. Last year overall, a 106 WRC plus. McMahon will at some point be brought in defensively, though, assuming the game calls for it. So with that in mind, I also like the idea of Rosario at the top of the order, because if McMahon is going to eventually be pinch hitting, if you don't have him in the top of the order, and say you bat Rosario in like the bottom third or like around the 6 or 7 hole, there's not many lineup variations you could set up to where you don't have Jazz, Rosario, Wells. And in that case, once McMahon's in, that would be 3 straight lefties, easy lane for the Giants to navigate with a lefty reliever. That's a little small caveat, but that's one of the reasons why I would start Rosario leading off. But the main thing is, if Grisham isn't playing, you kind of have to go this route. Otherwise, I'm not sure who would lead off. Randall Grichuk, for those who don't know, Yankees brought him in, minor league deal. He made the team. His career, he rakes against left-handed pitching. Kind of a down year last year, and he is getting older, but the numbers were still very substantially different between his success against right-handers, success against lefties. Grichuk, while getting older, father time, whatever, blah, 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 he's still a threat against southpaws. I would start him tonight. I would play him in left, Bellinger in center, Grisham sits, and then we'll see him later on. That's what's also really nice about what the Yankees have set up here with this lineup. The bench is so, like, ever-moving and interchangeable that, while I'm saying, yeah, Rosario's starting tonight, no doubt. Grichuk, I would play him in the outfield and sit Grisham. With that said, we know we'll be seeing McMahon at some point defensively, assuming it's not like a blowout, because then I guess, yeah, sure, who really cares? And with Grichuk, after Ray is out, you figure then you would put Trent Grisham in. And this early in the season, for all you know, Ray may only go like 4 or 5 innings. So while I'm saying start Grichuk, Grisham may get just as many at-bats. Because by the time Ray's out, you put Grisham in, he plays center, slide Bellinger back over to left. But this is what I would roll out tonight. Rosario, Bellinger, Judge, Rice, Stanton, Jazz, Caballero, Wells, Grichuk. The likelihood of this happening, the only question I really have, a couple questions. I could see the Yankees starting Goldschmidt tonight. I just don't know how they would do it. I'm wondering what's more likely. If Goldschmidt were to play tonight, does it come via him starting at first base, Rice sits, or Goldschmidt starts at DH and Stanton sits? Which, if they were to do that, they'd probably just DH Rice and play Goldschmidt at first. But in terms of Goldschmidt in, somebody out, is it going to be Rice? Is it going to be Stanton? Obviously, I've mentioned how I feel. I wouldn't do either. Both should play. But I almost feel like it's more likely if Goldschmidt plays tonight, it would be Goldschmidt in, Stanton out. But I wouldn't go that route. I would just keep him off the bench. And eventually, as we've always talked about, you know, there will be times where Ben Rice does need a day, and you'll plan that out when you're facing a lefty. Say it's, all right, yo, we got 6 games this week. Rice has been playing every day, and we want to give him a day off his feet. Well, you would plan that around what lefty or what day are we facing a lefty this week, and then you would slot in, all right, we'll play Goldschmidt this day. So, like, there will be times where Goldschmidt plays, Rice sits. I don't think today should be one of those days. We've also mentioned a million times here that in the case of a Giancarlo Stanton injury, while Jason Dominguez will assume the everyday at-bats against the right-handed pitchers at DH, Goldschmidt will automatically become the DH against left-handed pitchers if Stanton were to go down with an injury. But right now, that's not the case. So, yeah, biggest question, will Goldschmidt play tonight? Will Grichuk play tonight? I've made my point clear about what I want. Final lineup read-through, Rosario, Bellinger, Judge, Rice, Stanton, Jazz, Caballero, Wells, Grichuk. That's what I personally would roll out tonight, but the lineup will officially be out around probably 1 o'clock, as again, we got a 4:35 first pitch. We'll be live on the main channel for the watch party around 4:15. Also, some other stats to mention. Aaron Judge, while he went 0 for last time out against Ray, and that started in April of last year, he does have some pretty good career numbers off Ray, and they actually all came in 2021. He's 3 for 8 off-ray in his career with three homers. And I'm showing the video right now, but one of the homers was a two-run shot early in 2021 at the stadium dead center field. And many will remember this, the second to last series of 2021, while the Yankees were fighting for a playoff spot, Judge took Robbie Ray deep twice. And it was one of my favorite Michael K calls ever. It was, he had the first homer and it was big. Second at bat or third at bat, whatever it was, he has another one dead center field. And Michael K just went off. Like, what was his quote? It was, Judge laying down the gauntlet in the pennant race. Oh, he got me so hyped up. It was sick. Anyways, that was a few years back, but just so you guys know, 3-for-8 off his career against Ray with three home runs. Giancarlo Stanton, do got to mention this. I mean, these are all small sample sizes, so like I don't want to put too much stock in this, but just so you guys know, Stanton in his career versus Robbie Ray, 1-for-10, no home runs. Cody Bellinger in his career off Ray, just 2-for-15, a 133 batting average, that is. And, you know, we know Bellinger is a reverse splits guy to a high degree. Like lefties he rakes against. And righties last year, almost to a point where we don't talk about it enough that, yeah, Bellinger was great. Great against lefties last year. 180 WRC plus, which is superb. He was like just a little bit better than league average against right-handed pitching, which I feel like we don't talk about all that much. But anyways, in the case of Ray, that's not the case. He struggles against him, 2-for-15 in his career. And we mentioned Paul Goldschmidt, 0-for-5, but that's such a small sample size. Who really cares? But anyways, that's the question. Will we have the anti-lefty lineup versus Robbie Ray? I like calling it that too, the anti-lefty lineup. Because if you just say like the lefty lineup, you know, we know what we're saying because we know our team. But that would imply that there's going to be extra lefties in the lineup. No, we want the anti-lefty lineup, like in Spider-Man when he wears the anti-ox suit. Shout out my boy Michael Marquez, who said he might be watching today. Well, he probably only watched the first 5 minutes because now he's going to work. Shout out my boy Mike. Anyways, that is the lineup discussion for today. Again, we'll be probably out around like 1 o'clock, and I'll post it right away on the Yankees Avenue Instagram, Facebook. We'll also have it up on the main channel community page. But all right, let's move on to our next topic, and that is the Yankees starting pitcher, of course, being Cam Schlittler. Now, we know everything with Cam last year and his absurd outing against Boston in the wildcard series where he made postseason history. He was absolutely dominant. He was electric. And I mean, what else can you really say in a non-corny way? But I just got to use this word. I mean, he's got aura. He's got, there's something about him that just feels right. The sort of description you apply, not comparing the player, but in terms of attitude, the vibe he gives off, the athletes I like are very much of the Kobe ilk, the Jeter ilk, the Michael Jordan ilk, the guys that just have that look in their eyes and, you know, metaphorically speaking, they look like they want to kill somebody. And Cam Schlittler has that look, and I love it. And I didn't run it in this VO, but one of my favorite shots of Cam was in the wildcard game last year. And you'll remember there was some drama where I guess, you know, Boston fans, this stuff I don't really get into all that much, but it was cool given how Cam pitched. Boston fans prior to that game last year were saying shit about his mom. They were going at him because he's from Boston and like calling him, they were like, you know, they're name calling Cam, so they're kind of like getting under his skin. And that shit's fine. That's all well and good. That's part of the game. But anyways, there was a shot, if you go back and watch Cam as he's getting ready to warm up against Boston, like right before first pitch, where he's literally clenching his jaw and like grinding his teeth in anger. It very much gave Anakin Skywalker vibes. Anyways, I find Cam very badass. He is like exactly the persona I want in a Yankee, in a Yankee pitcher. He's a dog. And you figure, not figure, I shouldn't just keep saying that the word figure, but the hope, given what we saw last year and his absurd ascension into, while he's no longer a prospect, he's up there with, obviously, LeGrandhe. He's, in my opinion, already, no doubt about it, long-term potential. He's exceeded Elmer Rodriguez. I mean, he is a future ace. And he has that bulldog mentality to him. So that's all well and good. I think we're all kind of in agreement there, regardless. But we got a lot to break down here. We're going to hear from Cam in just a moment. But in terms of overall expectations this year, so last season, if you include the postseason, he had the Boston start, of course, and also pitched pretty damn well against Toronto in the game that, you know, they won the ALDS. But he went 6 innings, 2 runs. Overall, if you combine the regular season, his 14 starts, plus those 2 starts in the postseason, 16 games started, 5-4 record, 2.68 ERA, 98 strikeouts, and 87 1/3 innings pitched. Now, we know about the fastball will be consistently touching 100 miles an hour today. He has multiple variations of the fastball. four-seam, two-seam cutter, and the cutter looked pretty damn good in spring training. By the way, in spring this year, he allowed one run in 9 2/3 spring innings this spring with 11 strikeouts. Looked really good. Now, we know he got off to a late start because of the mid-back inflammation. So his pitch count, keep this in mind, his pitch count, he's only built up to around 70, 75, maybe 80 pitches. I wouldn't expect him, barring, you know, he's in cruise control, which is very much possible. We're probably looking at 4 innings of Cam tonight. So another conversation is the bullpen plan, which the bullpen, just one game, but off to a pretty good start. Bird looked terrific. Hedrick, a little rocky here and there, but scoreless inning, and he was able to get Rafael Devers out to end the inning, and Camilo Duvall looked really good. Anyways, we may rely heavily on the bullpen tonight because of the fact Cam is not all the way built up. But also, with that said, 70, 75, 80 pitches, I mean, we know who Cam is. He's more than capable of, theoretically, I mean, he can get through 6 innings at that, or 5, whatever it may be. But I would, you know, to keep expectations tempered a little bit, we might only be getting 4 innings out of Cam tonight. But I want to really talk about the expectations for Cam overall this year. But before we do that, let's take a listen to him kind of talking about his expectations. Some people, so he was asked by, this is Steven Cusimano, who works with the Somerset Patriots, about his expectations for this year, kind of the narrative surrounding him, whether he's a fluke or not. And his answer was pretty cool. Here's Cam Schlittler.
Sure, you know, again, I think there's a little bit of an underdog to that. I think there's still a little bit of an underdog to it, just, you know, in terms of, you know, only got 3 months in, you know. People may think that it's a fluke or whatever it is. So, again, I'm ready to go out there and prove what I need to prove.
You kind of like that chip on your shoulder that you always have something to strive for, even though you've put up, you know, again, one of the greatest results the team's ever seen in a postseason game?
For sure. You know, I think, again, we're the Yankees. You know, people don't like us. There's always that chip on your shoulder. So, for me to be, you know, thrown into an environment that already has that feeling is great. And for me, that's what I'm going to feed off. So, again, I'm looking really forward to the season.
Not to glaze, as the kids say, but I fucking love Cam Schlittler, man. And I want to make sure I phrase this properly, but in that interview, especially in the first little snippet, we're just like, you know. He, in the best way possible, like, I don't mean this in a negative way, he kind of comes off like a tool in that interview, in a cool way. Like, I like him more after watching that. Like, he just seems like... Cam Schlittler kind of comes off like a punk. In the best way, in the way I'd want my young and up-and-coming 25-year-old, same age as me, so I guess I shouldn't be, you know, calling him a kid, whatever it may be. He's got it, man. He's got it. And there's so much more I know that goes into what makes a player successful besides just attitude. But when you factor in the dude's got a 100-mile-an-hour fastball, a curveball that's developing that, in my opinion, when it's on, is just as lethal as the fastball, in part because it's paired with that fastball. It plays really well. They play really well with each other. He's also incorporating a changeup. We won't see him use that all that much, but we know the stuff is superb. That's one side, and that's the more important. You know, if you do a pie chart, what's the most important thing? Probably at least 85% of it is just the pitcher's stuff. Maybe 70, and then you factor in 10% makeup, 10% attitude, poise, all that. There's a lot that goes into it, is my point here, but we know about his stuff. It's lethal. His attitude, though, I love. And it's weird because I'm 25 now, and I'm jealous of the spot that Cam Schlittler is in, because the way he handles himself is like exactly how, like, if I were doing an MLB The Show or just imagining my life when I'm dreaming last night, just about every single night I dream, I'm either a Yankee or I'm Spider-Man or I'm a Jedi. Cam is, like, if I was a pitcher on the New York Yankees, like, that's how I'd want to come off, is how Cam comes off. It's just like, he's a killer. He's got that Kobe vibe to him. And let's get more into the, wrap this up here with the long-term thoughts, at least for this year. He's projected to have a 3.68 ERA. That sounds reasonable. Strikeouts, if he's making a full 30 starts, which, you know, that's a big question, that alone is what can determine if it's a successful year or not for Cam to be, you know, healthy and make a full season's worth of starts. If he makes 30 starts and, let's just say, 170, 180 innings pitched, we might be seeing a 200 strikeout season for all we know. But the long-term outlook is a frontline starter, whether that's number two or number one. And he had a quote that I really like. He goes, with Carlos and Garrett hurt, someone's got to step up. I mean, word. We talk a lot about the postseason rotation, what the ultimate plan is. Once Rodon and Cole are back, and you only need four starters in the postseason, Freed, Cole, Rodon, Cam is just the general thought. That will be, ideally, if everything works out, our four-man rotation come October. And obviously that speaks for itself, just the first three starters in that scenario. But, like, I think a lot of us just assume Cam's going to pick up where he left off last year, and I think that's totally reasonable. While also having a slight, like, yo, he's a rookie, got to naturally don't get too crazy with expectations. But it almost feels like you kind of have to have high expectations for Cam. It just feels so legit. And if it is legit, I mean, dude, we are set up, obviously, this year. But long term, man, whether it's with him, whether it's with Carlos LeGrand, hey, Elmer Rodriguez, the Yankees have more pitching prospects on top of that. Will Warren, by the way, he's going to be starting on Saturday. We'll preview him more tomorrow morning. Actually, you know what? We won't have a morning Yankee show tomorrow morning, but we will talk about him a little bit on tonight's watch party. He excelled this spring. He's made some changes mechanically, and he kind of is, you know, flown under the radar because the Yankees are so loaded with pitching prospect depth and, like, their young arms with Cam, with everybody that we've mentioned, that Will Warren kind of sneaks by, but he's under control through 2030 as well. So, I mean, you know, a few weeks ago we talked about kind of like the Yankees' 2030 rotation, and we laid it all out with, well, Fried will still be under contract at that point. Cole will be gone. Rodon will be gone. But you'll still have Fried, probably not a front-end starter by that point. That's fine. But through 2030, like, this rotation should be anchored 5 years from now still by Cam Schlittler, by Will Warren, by Carlos Agranje, Elmer Rodriguez, if he's not traded, or if any of those guys in the scenario aren't traded. And then, to go back to what we talked about off the top, Paul Skeens is a free agent. I mean, I firmly believe, come the 2030 season, I'll be coming on here probably, you know, maybe with a wife and kids at that time, at that point. And we'll be looking at a rotation. Cam Schlittler, Will Warren, Carlos Agranje, Elmer Rodriguez, headed by our new ace, Paul Skeens. And then Max Fried at the back end as well. Which Max Fried's contract, that should age pretty well, because he's not just all about, you know, the example I always go back to is CeCe. And nobody made a better adjustment than CeCe did from high velo on the fastball to transitioning to a more soft contact inducing pitcher. Fried is set up pretty nice to do that long term. Now, he's got a good fastball. Like, he can get it up to 98 at times. I think we even saw it like 99 at points last year. But a lot of times Fried will just be sitting 93, 94. And a lot of it is, you know, not finesse, but he is a lefty pitcher. He's got great stuff. Ground balls, he does induce contact, strikes out a lot of guys, but also, you know, gets outs many different ways. Fried's contract should age pretty well. That's neither here nor there. Cam Schlittler, though, expectations, while naturally I want to be like, you know, we can't be going too crazy, you know, it reminds me kind of like Gary Sanchez in 2016. I always took pride in, like, when I'm writing my little, like, projections while in chemistry class in high school. Gary's coming off his 20-homer season in 53 games, and the natural mindset is Gary's hitting 50 homers this year. Like, what's he going to look like in a full season? And I remember feeling, like, so smart, and kind of rightfully so in this case. It's like, no, people don't understand. It's not a guarantee he's just going to hit 50 homers. Like, that's not how it works. I'm going to predict Gary Sanchez hit 27 homers, but guess what? That's still going to be a great year. He ended up hitting 33, and it was a very successful 2017 season for him. Like, we shouldn't just assume Cam's going to win Cy Young this year. Not that anybody is. Let's just go off the projection of that 3.68 ERA. I mean, that's fine. That's really good, actually, anyways. But not all 3.68 ERAs are equal. A 3.68 ERA from, let's just say, one of Marcus Stroman's better years, that looks way different than a 3.68 ERA from Carlos Rodon or Gerrit Cole or potentially what Cam Schlittler could be. My expectation is a frontline starter, a number two, number one capable, that is actually going to be pitching in the fourth game come the postseason if all works out. Expectations are high. He'll be taking the ball tonight. 4:35 first pitch, Yankees-Giants on, yes, and thank the heavens above. Thank the heavens above. Bad news tomorrow, though, is on Fox. 7:15 first pitch. Okie doke. Let's move on to topic four. I really like this quote from Jazz. Now, Jazz had a good opening day. He went 1-for-3, also got plunked pretty hard in the ribs, but had an RBI as well, which you're seeing here on the screen if you're watching on video. But yeah, good opening day for Jazz. Also had a pretty crazy play at second base. I'm sure we all were watching, but the ball pops off the heel of his glove and he barehand catches it right here, I'm showing. That was pretty insane. Jazz is awesome. And I have like a weird relationship with Jazz. One-sided, he doesn't know who I am. But I've been gassing this guy up ever since we got him. And the thought I've always had, and it's very much came to fruition. A lot of people have thought this way, is what will Jazz be once you get him out of Miami? And then once that happened, it was a current conversation of, now that he's a Yankee, what's the ceiling look like? Well, last year he put up a 30-30 season, OPS above 800. He was stat-wise terrific. WRC plus of in the 120s. The defense, 8 outs above average, which was fantastic. It was a good year, war over 4. I still think we haven't reached that ceiling. And the main reason being, the talent is so immense. The skills that he has, like, it's almost in a way similar to how people talked about Robinson Cano, but it was wrong the way they did it. It's like, Cano has so much talent, but not that he's lazy, but like there's a certain way that he plays. You think there's a tier above if he just like locked in. Cano, I think that was wrong to describe him that way. But Jazz, I think it does apply. I love Jazz, and there's more I want to talk about this. He had a great quote, a great quote. That's what this is about. We'll get to that in just a moment. But my thoughts on Jazz is he's so good, I think he can be so much better. And hey, so far so good. Like, that's really how I treat these games, seasons. Yeah, we only got one game. That's all I got to operate off of. And so far, Jazz is 1-for-1. He looked. He also had a stolen base on Wednesday too. So far so good for Jazz. A lot of boxes have been checked early where it's, yo, what can I really complain about when it comes to opening day? But that's now the past. We got a game 2 coming up later. Anyways, this quote from Jazz, I love. So he was asked about the Yankees running it back, which we know is a big storyline entering this season. And I really liked his answer. I think this is one of Jazz's best quotes since being a Yankee. He goes, once you lose in the playoffs, nobody cares about anything else but that. They don't ever look at what is going on before that. The playoffs isn't the end goal. It's to win the World Series. But people don't realize what we were putting together before the World Series. This was a team that we thought was going to win the World Series. It's why we're running it back to see it for the whole season. You never know. Just how we started tonight, talking about opening day, it could be a successful year. I love this quote from Jazz. Love it. And it really describes perfectly the mindset of why the Yankees are indeed running it back. I mean, the quote about what he says here is, people don't realize what we were putting together before the World Series. This was a team that we thought was going to win the World Series. We're running it back for the whole season. You never know. Just how we started tonight, it could be a successful year. I cannot emphasize enough how perfectly articulated this is. And it's very much how I think, and obviously how the Yankees think. But it's kind of what I always talk about, how, you know, after the ALDS last year, I'm with all you guys of, I'm emotional, I'm pissed, and for that reason, I want consequences, I want to see change. I always use this example, but like, I'm, to many people, an Aaron Boone defender, but more so I don't just wrongly criticize him for shit that's not his fault. With that said, I'm always saying, listen, I'm not going to call for Boone's job, but every time we get bounced, in terms of like the grand scheme of things, big picture, I'm always down to clean house because I want to show what has happened is not acceptable. It's not. Last year, losing to Toronto, that was a disgrace. That was embarrassing. It sucked. But what I'm speaking from right now is ultimately emotion. When you apply logic to it, you can realize last year's team, particularly post-trade deadline, was really good. And no matter what changes we made in the offseason, whether it's if we had signed Kyle Tucker, if we acquired Corey Seager, got both of them, ultimately, it really wouldn't make a difference if, I feel so bad I always am picking on this guy, but it's just like the line I go to because it makes sense. No matter what we did this offseason, if our ace gives up 7 earned runs against Toronto in this year's division series, it doesn't make a difference. And the reason I keep saying that is, yeah, we can talk about the offense, we can talk about the strikeouts, which is valid to a degree. There's adjustments that need to be made, which, by the way, running it back with the same core only means we're more prepared to deal with what we experienced as a group last year. I figure, come the series against Toronto, they're going to be ready to go. Come the postseason, it's, hey, we've been there, done that, in terms of done that being, we know what it's like to lose. Let's not let that happen again this year. I think the Yankees, because they're running it back, are going to be even more prepared for things like that. But the team last year very well could have gone on to win it all if, let's say, yeah, Max Fried pitches a little bit better in game two. And it's not all on Max Fried. We talked about Rodon, how he was bad. Yankees did win that game because the Judge homer. We're going to talk about Judge in just a moment. But like game one against Toronto, Luis Gil was terrible. Luis Gil not only will not be in the postseason rotation this year, he may not even be on the postseason roster for all we know. And he started game one of the American League Division Series last year. What do you prefer, Luis Gil or Gerrit Cole? And you guys know I'm a big Luis Gil guy, but this speaks for itself. Just because the Yankees lost in four to Toronto last year does not mean this was a bad team. It was a very disappointing season and embarrassing, as I mentioned. But not only that, is it the same team? Sure, the core is the most similar year-to-year core that we've had. Which is more and more thing about, by the way, I like. It's cool. Like, when I was running the Robbie Ray VO before, you know, I'll only include video of guys that are currently on the team. So say, like, I'm doing a 2024 VO talking about, say the Yankees face Robbie Ray in 2024, and I was running that video, I would have, like, cut out the Soto if he were to have strike out or done something against him, because it doesn't apply anymore. It's not on the team. Who cares? I was able to run the full Robbie Ray VO because it's literally, it's our team. Like, it's the same last year to this. And I really do like that. It's the same group. It's the same core. And again, I think there is an added, like, team chemistry thing to that. There is an added, I don't know, ability to build, like, off a certain mindset going into a game as, yo, we know what this was like last year. Let's not let it happen again. But again, to wrap this up, is it the same team, though? Like, it's not. It's the same core, but better. Because, you're getting Cole back, Rodon back, everything that we've talked about. And we're comparing our team right now to start the season to the team post-trade deadline last year. Well, guess what? We got another trade deadline coming up in July. And you figure, barring, you know, the bullpen just excelling, I think either way, though, like, the Yankees better go out and get a reliever, and I think they will. They'll improve this team at the deadline. They always do to a degree. And what's nice with this squad, we really only need some supplemental additions, and the bullpen being the main one. If it's not clear already, it's official to me. Like, I am glad we ran it back. Because I'm glad right now, because now we're here. Going into the offseason, it's terrible thinking about. It's like the worst offseason a fan base could endure is a team running it back. Unless they won it all the previous year. But if they didn't, it's, one, just frustrating because you want change. Two, it's a boring offseason to get through. I mean, our biggest storyline was waiting on Cody Bellinger's return, and that was tedious as hell. Eventually, it got done. But, like, now that we're here, though, if I needed to be reminded of this, which I really didn't by now, but, like, I like watching this team. I like this group of dudes. And a big part of it is because I think they're really good. And this quote from Jazz, I love it. People don't realize what we were putting together before the World Series. This is the team we thought was going to win the World Series. That's why we're running it back. I mean, that sums it up right there. And by all means, like, you can argue that you think it was a silly decision. But what's clear is this is what the Yankees think. The way Jazz described it is how the Yankees feel. We think this team can win the World Series. We think this team should have won the World Series. I said it last year. Boone was talking about it a lot. That this is the best team of the Judge era, I think. The best roster going into a postseason the Yankees had. I said it last year. I still stand by that. And remember how Boone was talking. There was a different tone in his voice about this squad. Like, it just felt we were set up. And also, not to mention, I shouldn't just pick on Max Fried. The bullpen was terrible. Luke Weaver, granted, Toronto had a tell on his pitches and, you know, injury, whatever it may be. Nothing against Weaver. And I wish him well in Queens, whatever. He was terrible. If whoever's manning the seventh inning or the eighth inning, Luke Weaver's role last year where he was imploding against Toronto, if that same thing happens, whoever's fulfilling that role this year, same logic. Like, it doesn't matter what we did this offense. It doesn't matter if we signed Kyle Tucker or signed Bo Bichette, whatever it may be. Like, most likely, if our bullpen is as bad against Toronto in the postseason this year, whoever we're facing, as it was last year, and then, yeah, Max Fried should have had, like, we're screwed regardless. The offense wasn't good last year. I understand that. But it was also a very small sample size. When I say the offense is good, I'm talking about in the Toronto series. But for the most part, they really didn't have a chance. And last thing, I mean, Judge, like, that, the game he hit the homer, Rodon was terrible. The Yankees were down at 1.6-1 in that game, and we thought that was going to be it, and they came back. The pitching is what took a dump against Toronto last year. Anyways, fantastic quote by Jazz. No doubt about it. My favorite, probably, unless I'm forgetting something, my favorite quote, my favorite interview, favorite Jazz snippet that we've gotten since he became a Yankee. That was a fantastic quote. Fantastic quote. Anyways, let's wrap things up with this. I'm not going to spend too much time on this one, but I want to talk about something CeCe Sabathia said, in part just because, you know, people are making a big deal about Judge 4 strikeouts on opening day. Let me rephrase that. Honestly, no, people aren't. Mostly what the story is, if you see this going around, it's more so Yankee fans, anybody with a brain, going at the people who are calling out Judge for opening day. Like Stephen A. Smith, I love Stephen A. Smith. I think he's hilarious. Became a big fan during his during the LeVar Ball days. His interview with LeVar Ball, I'll still watch that like once a year. It's hilarious. I love Stephen A. I understand what he's doing. And I understand, and this is an unfortunate example of the state of ESPN and baseball, they don't know ball. They only talk about it from a national perspective. And the national story, which national storylines in baseball are typically the most generic, often misguided thoughts ever. It's Judge 0 for 5, 4 Ks, coming off the WBC. And like Stephen A was just going in, there are other people too. Obviously, they can get lost. We don't care about them. But I do want to discuss something CeCe Sabathia said. It'd be nice if I had my camera on the shot. Bear with me 1 second. 1 second, Chet. Okay. There we go. All right, so CeCe was saying, and I guess this was on the broadcast the other night, but when I'm doing the watch parties, honestly, I don't really hear the commentary all that much. And I think CeCe wasn't great the other day. I love him to death. You know, he's just getting his feet wet in the in-booth commentary game, so there's room to grow, but it's fine, whatever. Anyways, he said this about Judge and his postseason, blah, blah, blah. He goes, I thought Judge had a great October last year, which of course he did, by the way, hit 500, the homer, we all know that. CeCe goes, I think he's going to have one of those Octobers where he hits 10 homers like A-Rod did in 09. And until he does, people are going to continue to compare him to whoever in any other sport that people perceive to not be clutch. The article goes on to say, Judge's actual postseason numbers are far better than the discourse suggests, but in the Bronx, perception is a living thing and it only dies when a player is buried with something historic. The bigger picture here is that CeCe sees in this 2026 Yankee squad, deep rotation, dangerous lineup, blah, blah, blah. The last line, though, he says, when Judge finally has his 2009 A-Rod postseason, and Sabathia is confident he will, the critics are going to have a very familiar response. Silence. So the reason I bring this up is, one, it's an interesting thought, and we've talked about this as a fan base before, like Judge needs his A-Rod 09. I completely disagree with CeCe here, though. Judge had his A-Rod 09 last year. He was just as good as A-Rod in 09 for what he was allowed to be. Like, Judge ain't the reason our postseason was only 6 games last year, and in those 6 games, he hit 500. Hit a very clutch game-tying home run against Toronto. Dude, why does my freaking camera keep going away? Hold on, I got a point to make here. I apologize for those listening on audio. Let me be quick here. No, Judge could hit 500 over 18 games in the postseason through game 7 of the World Series, but if the Yankees don't win, that's that. There's nothing left for him to do. He's shown he can be clutch. He's shown he can hit in the postseason. The postseason OPS is above 800 now, by the way. Career 830 OPS in the World Series, by the way. No big deal. But no, like, Judge had his A-Rod 09 postseason last year. Now, obviously, much different, and it's not, can't be looked at in the same light ultimately because A-Rod did it over a full postseason. A-Rod was terrific. What was his stats? He had 356, 6 homers, 18 RBIs, was unbelievably clutch, had 3 homers in the 7th, game-tying homers in the 7th inning or later. He was superb. We all know that. Judge was superb last year, and had the Yankees gone on through the World Series, we're probably looking at a similar, if not better, postseason compared to A-Rod in 09. But what did A-Rod do? He won. Had the Yankees not won in 09, A-Rod's postseason, yeah, we talk about it, but like ultimately nobody would care. Judge could hit 800 in the postseason. If he doesn't win, nobody will care. The last box left for him to check is not to prove that he's clutch. He's done that. He's gotten, at this point, there's so many instances of Judge being clutch, obviously in the regular season. But in the postseason, too, like he's had many big homers. The homer against Toronto, obviously. The one against Emmanuel Clase. You look at the all-time go-ahead home runs in the postseason, Judge ranks at the top of the list. I mean, yes, there's been struggles. There's been times where, and that's a big part of it. Like, does 2025 totally excuse Judge? No, it doesn't. It shows he's more than capable of performing in the postseason. That argument should be squashed, and to me it is. But also, put it back to A-Rod, for example. Say the Yankees in 09 had not won, but A-Rod hit 356, 6 homers, 18 RBIs, but the Yankees actually lost to the Phillies in 6. Sure, in 09 he showed up, but what would Yankee fans have been saying? Would have been nice if he could have done that in 04, which 04 he was actually pretty good until game 4 of the CS, but would have been nice if he could have done that in 05, 06, 07. That's what the mindset would be, and understandably so. Like with Judge, people were probably saying, yeah, Judge was great last year, and it's not his fault why we got bounced in 2025, but man, it would have been nice to have that Judge in 2024 or 2022, and that's 100% valid. He has to win. He has to win the ring. He could go 35 for 35 with 10 home runs in the postseason this year. Think he's going to win the World Series? That's what will be remembered. And rightfully so. I don't have an issue with that because ultimately, like, we're the ones that create that narrative. We're the ones that create that bubble to live in. And it's, yes, we have to effing win, bro. And if we do, if we don't, could it be Judge's fault? Yes. Could it be because of Judge? Yes. But no matter what, whether it's aided by him or not, negatively or positively, he just has to win. He could go, I mentioned 35-35 and nobody would care if we don't win. He could go 0 for 35, maybe a sack fly in there that like tied the game or something. But if he wins, that's all that matters. That's the last box left to check. There's nothing else to be done. He just has to win. He has to get his one. And then once he does, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. If any, you know, older listeners on here, trust me, I respect my Yankees history. And I'm not saying this out of my freaking you know what. But seriously, if you put the numbers next to each other, the only thing that is keeping Judge below Mickey Mantle on the Yankees all-time, or not, excuse me, keeping Aaron Judge below Joe DiMaggio on the Yankees all-time Mount Rushmore is the ring. Obviously, Judge isn't going to get as many as DiMaggio did. DiMaggio was a dog, served in World War II. He's awesome, different circumstances, whatever. But in terms of player-to-player comparison, Aaron Judge has exceeded DiMaggio. And no, it's not just because he's passed on the all-time home run list. Nobody cares about that ultimately because, you know, you can't really use DiMaggio's counting stats. That's unfair to use against him because he missed time due to the war. But the rate stats, the player, who they are, the slash line, on base, slugging, overall production, Aaron Judge, no pun intended, has exceeded Joe DiMaggio. But he hasn't because he hasn't won. He has to get the one ring, just one. He doesn't need two. He doesn't need five. He doesn't need 10 like Yogi. He needs the one. He needs to be a champion. And then once he's a champion, everything else just falls into place because it's already there in waiting. Everything else is, everything with Judge is right here. Once he gets the ring, greatness. It's the only thing that is preventing him. Last box left to check. So I disagree with CC on this. A-Rod, in my opinion, like had his, or A-Rod, Judge had his A-Rod 09, and it was last year. Obviously much different, but ultimately what made A-Rod in an 09 so special is it ended with a championship. And that's all I got for today, Chet. That's all I got for today. Of course, we will be live on the main channel this afternoon slash evening, 4:15 Eastern. We will be live right around there for the watch party. First pitch at 4:35 on YES. And by the way, I haven't checked the cable programming, but remember, YES is doing a new set of like pregame shows. They've added over an hour and a half of like pregame content, and they should be showing the Aaron Boone press conference in its entirety. I forget some of the details of what else they're adding, but they have a bunch of new like pregame stuff being added to their slot and like their cable lineup. So I'm gonna be checking some of that out later. But anyways, we will be live around 4:15 on the main channel. First pitch at 4:35 Eastern. Hope to see all you guys there. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Morning Yankee Show. We will be live back with this show on Monday morning. But yeah, we're live later today for the game. We'll also be live tomorrow night for the series finale in San Francisco. All those watch parties are on the main channel. Anyways, everybody have a fantastic Friday. And hopefully I'll see you later for the watch party. Thank you guys so much for being here. Let's go Yanks.